Do the writers hate Ewoks? Can Phil be saved? And what's the deal with Faraday's memory? We'll have those questions and more in today's official Lost audio podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. We're here today with executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse to prehash our upcoming episode entitled The Variable. And yes, that is Lost's 100th hour. Woohoo! Yeah, it's just me in here partying it up with myself. In any case, that airs on Wednesday, April 29th at 9 p.m., followed by a brand new episode of The Unusuals. Don't forget that you can submit your questions, concerns, comments, rants, whatever you want for Damon and Carlton to read on the podcast, or at least make fun of, at blogs.abc.com/AskLost. Here now are Damon and Carlton.
Good morning, Damon.
Good morning, Carlton.
How the heck are you today?
I am. I'm feeling good. We're going to be done in about a week editing the finale, which is on the air in about 3.5 weeks.
And then we're going to Paris.
Yes, we're going to Paris. The show has been honored with a Jules Verne Award.
Or it will be honored.
Will be honored. Well, they told
Hopefully
us.
They'll give
they
it
told
to
us we're going to win, which is why we're going. We've been invited a couple times to go abroad since we started the show, and we've never said yes because we're always too busy working on the show. But finally, we have this one golden opportunity to sort of go gallivanting.
How's your French?
It's not good. It is not bien. It is pas de bien. It is not well
Okay. Well, that's
spoken.
Something.
Yeah. Okay, let's rehash.
Wait. Let's acknowledge that it's Chris's birthday today. Happy birthday, Chris.
Happy birthday, Chris. Thanks. Chris was complaining about how the fact that
he's
last year...
He's podcasted every year on his birthday since he was 9.
Last year.
And we've never acknowledged it.
So happy birthday, Chris.
So this year, this will count for the next year's podcast and the zombie season podcast as well.
You don't look a day over
46. 57.
What?
57.
57.
It's the eyeliner.
Yeah. Wonderful. I'm glad.
Okay.
Quickly becoming the Gelman of the show.
Are we going to rehash episode 513, Some Like It Hoth, Damon?
Well, from what I understand, Carlton, many of the fan questions deal with this episode. It has catalyzed the fan community in many ways, so I think the less said, the better. I do think, obviously, now we are coming, Some Like It Hoth is the last episode of sort of romping around in Dharma times before the proverbial merd hits the fan. Can we say that? You
yeah,
can say that
sure.
on a podcast.
It's French.
Sure,
it's
exactly. French. It looks like things are coming to an end in Dharma times. Sawyer has basically knocked out Phil. He and Juliet are going to tie the guy up. You know, Kate...
Are you saying no more jokes for the rest of the year?
There might be two or three jokes, but it's not...
Not too many jokes.
It's not exactly going to be...
A laugh riot.
Yeah, exactly. No more hootenannies.
You know what I did like, though, that the audience predicted that Miles and Pierre Chang were father and son, and guess what? They were!
Right. Yeah, that's one of those things people ask us all the time. Do the fans guess theories? Do you read fan theories? When you see that the fans have got it right, do you course correct so you can still surprise them? No. When we introduced Miles on the show, from the first moment, the fans go, well, Miles is Chinese, and Marvin Candle, they didn't know his name was Pierre Chang yet, is Chinese, so they must be father and son. And we're like, damn, is it that obvious? So that actually did influence the way that we revealed it in the show. I think Greg Nations and Melinda Sue-Taylor, who wrote this episode, when we talked about it in the room, we basically said, it's going to be a revelation for a lot of people who are not on the fan sites. But for the fans, they're going to know, of course, Chang is Miles' father. So how do we present it?
And that's good because, like, you know, the show should not be one where fans never get anything or guess anything.
I like the way that we chose to reveal it, which was that Miles sort of says, that douche is my dad, as opposed to saying... Yeah, we know that many of you guessed it, and I do know this, that douche...
That would have been a good title, but we discarded it because that douche is my dad, because it might have been too much of a spoiler.
A giveaway, right.
Yeah.
Douche is some French I know, though, Carlton. It means shower.
That's good.
So I will be taking lots of douches when we are in Paris.
I don't know if I needed to know that.
Well, I'm just saying.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad you're going to be
clean.
Clean
for our award. The next episode, Carlton, just a little prehash, our 100th episode, the 100th Hour of Lost. It's called The Variable. Can you believe that we made it this far?
No, I really can't. I think if I was to time travel back to season two and say, hey, Damon, you know what? It may not seem very pleasant right now, but pretty soon we're going to be sitting here on a couch talking about the 100th episode of Lost, and that will be an occurrence.
And you then would have said, I would turn to you and say, okay, Carlton, tell me what happens if they don't push the button. We're still figuring it out.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Those were the days.
But The Variable, Damon, would that be somehow a reference to the constant from last season? Would there be a connection between those two episodes?
I do feel that for those of you who are still listening to this podcast or still in high school, and you basically raise your hand and you say, am I ever going to need to know this math, this calculus, this algebra? Will it ever be important? And the answer is
no.
No. But
at least you'll know what a variable is.
At least you'll know what a variable
is
and what a constant are based on these episodes. The Variable is written by Eddie Kitsis and Adam Horowitz. We felt like since we wrote the A side, the constant, the sister episode should probably be written by somebody other than us and spread the love. And we think it's a pretty cool hour. And obviously, Faraday is back. He says,
important.
Long time no see. He's in a Dharma sub. He's wearing a Dharma jumpsuit. Are we to gather, Carlton, that Faraday has been a member of the Dharma Initiative for the past 3 years?
I think we are to
say no more, Carlton. We don't want to give it away on this.
But we can say that Faraday will be in this episode.
Yes.
And I think this really came out as one of the best episodes of the season. So we're excited to see what you guys think of it. You know, we didn't really set out to do something special for the 100th episode, but somehow the 100th episode, I think, really did. Is one of the high water marks of the season, so we're very excited about it. All right, let's get to some questions, because this is always the really fun part. Chris, questions?
Here we go!
Question number one, from Carol in Georgetown, D.C. Why does Sawyer even bother wearing shirts?
Carol, that is an awesome question, and there really is no good reason why Sawyer should be wearing a shirt at all. It's really that we have a wardrobe department and they're getting paid, so they got to do something.
And probably if he was walking around the Dharma Initiative without a shirt on, he probably would not have the post of head of security.
No, that's true. It would be hard to stencil that on his
chest. You could get a tattoo and then we could do a flashback episode about it.
You know, Damon, I'm kind of curious, like, what would be your three most interesting facts about Sawyer that... What would be a couple of things that you really like about Sawyer that maybe the audience isn't aware of?
One thing that I love about Sawyer is that he wears glasses, just like you and I do.
That's true.
And we did a whole episode about that. That's sort of a little more obvious, but I like the thinking man Sawyer, you know, the Winston Churchill sort of, you know, when I was a kid and I got Star Wars figures, you could sort of get Han Solo and different, you know, you could get sort of traditional Han and Hoth Han, Bespin Han, and, you know, I like thinking man Sawyer with his glasses on. Another thing that a lot of people don't know about Sawyer is that he's ambidextrous.
That is an interesting fact, you know.
Because his gun hand, if he's pointing a gun at you, he's a lefty.
But he catches things with his right hand. We've seen him write with his left hand. That might not mean that that's the only way he can write.
You write with your left hand, don't you, Carlton?
I do write with my left hand, but when I was a little kid, I write very weirdly with my left hand, and I had, you know, teacher who tried to basically train me to write with my right hand, and so I was briefly a righty because, you know, people didn't really want me to be a lefty, but I reverted back to becoming a lefty.
I think that when we were first talking about Sawyer being a con man, we decided that he should be ambidextrous because all good con men can sign with both hands, because that's a good way to mask your handwriting.
And your identity as well, because, you know, if you basically are, if somebody says, well, is that, what are the defining characteristics of that person? They say, well, he's left-handed. Maybe the next time he plays a role, he's right-handed.
And the third thing that I like most about Sawyer is that he likes to just hit you without warning. He did it to Saeed in the jail cell.
Oh, yeah.
He did it to Phil now. Is this the last time that we've seen Sawyer hit somebody this season, Carlton?
Ow!
Wow, you did not have to. All right.
I guess that's a great illustration. The thing about Sawyer is that he recognizes that the person who strikes first and was surprised in a fight usually wins. It's like a basic tactic of street fighting. If you basically get that first blow in and it is a true surprise, you're putting yourself in a pretty good position to win that fight.
My eyes are really watering. That was just a good, that was a good shot, a cheap shot.
It was a cheap shot, but it was better, a good way for me to illustrate the point.
Well, do you have any questions for me, Carlton?
I do. So while you hold your nose, I'm going to ask you this question here. Hey, Damon, Carlton, now that Naomi has reappeared, there's something that has always bothered me. Why was there only one helicopter on the freighter, yet when Naomi parachuted on the island, everybody heard her helicopter crash into the ocean? Is that ever going to be explained? Asks Betsy from Lakeland, Florida.
There were two helicopters on the freighter. There was sort of the scout helicopter that's the one you're referencing, which is Naomi's helicopter that she, you know, basically parachuted out of and did crash in the water. And the other helicopter was Lapidus's helicopter, which was our hero helicopter. So you, if you go back and look at the season, you will see that there are two helipads on the freighter. There was a point, and obviously when Michael gets on the boat and meet Kevin Johnson, both helicopters are there. One obviously was to transport people in and out, and one was sort of as a spotter, and that was Naomi's job.
I just have another thing here I just want to add.
Please.
Aaron Farquhar from San Diego, California says, thanks for giving us the reason of the $3.2 million demand.
Oh, cool.
For Miles.
Yeah, you and I actually sort of debated these monetary issues, and I said...
And monetary policy.
Yeah, I said if basically Widmore is offering Miles $1.6 million, and then later on when Bram is trying to get Miles to not go to the island, and Miles says, you have to pay me double to not do that, will people really extrapolate that this is why he asked Ben for $3.2 million in season four when he is trying to flip sides? And you were like, someone out there will be grateful, and I said, no one will be grateful. They're never grateful.
But
they never thank us.
Aaron is grateful, and I just wanted to say, Damon, see, at least one person cares about understanding why Miles picked that $3.2 million figure.
Okay, my next question for you, Carlton, is, are you Aaron Farquhar?
No.
All right.
I am not Aaron Farquhar.
It's not on my list, but I just wanted to try to catch you off guard, like when you punched me in the face.
Okay. Damon.
Yep.
And Carlton, before I get to my question, I just want to thank you for making the best show ever made, but on to my question.
Enough about Nash Bridges.
On ABC's Lost message boards, I have made a petition to save Phil from the Dharma Initiative. I have received over 4,000 positive responses. Is there any way we'll be seeing any more hootenannies in season 6?
Will Phil survive the Dharma Initiative?
Yes.
Are we saying, like, is he going to get purged out, or what will be the fate of Phil?
Yeah, basically, you got a Phil fan here. Can you give us any hint as to what Phil's future on the show is?
All I will say is that there is a high probability that when you watch the 15th episode of this season entitled Follow the Leader, you might change your mind about Phil's fate.
Yeah.
And that's, if you're a Phil fan, I guess it's a P-H-A-N, and this would be Phil's fate, P-H-A-T-E. So I would withhold judgment on what you want to have happen to Phil.
Okay.
Carlton.
Yep.
This is from Pateri Alber from Tampere, Finland. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It could be Tampere. Anyway, it's Finland.
What's wrong with your Finnish?
There's probably something wrong with my start as well. Greetings, Mr. David
Wow.
Cross and Sir Ron Perlman.
It's Bill Walton or Ted Danson. Just get it straight.
In the series finale, are the people on the island going to repair the Black Rock and sail it into the sunset? Also, what is Ben's favorite TV show? So, first question, will they repair the Black Rock and sail it into the sunset?
I don't think we should say definitively, but that's a pretty cool idea, and we'll leave it at that.
Okay. And what is Ben's favorite TV show?
Nightline.
Wow.
he likes Nightline. He's an intellectual guy. He has kind of a Ted Koppel fixation. And so, there were many years of Nightline with Ted Koppel, and I think that during the time that Ted Koppel was doing Nightline, that was really...
So he'd go over to the Flame Station and hang out with Mikhail and
just
basically
watch,
fire up.
They'd make some popcorn and watch and fire up the TV and watch Ted Koppel and Nightline.
Is it true, Carlton, that Ben actually sent Richard Alpert and Ethan to try to recruit Ted Koppel to join the others and failed?
You know what they liked the most about Ted Koppel was his hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, sure. there's a lot of wacky hair on Lost. And right. And he was kind of fixated about it. In fact, he styled his hair in a odd manner influenced by Ted Koppel. We saw that in last week's flashback.
Wow. That's why the people listen to this podcast. It's those kind of cutting edge.
I'm not quite sure what this person's point is, but let me read this question and you can maybe figure out what their point of view is. Okay?
Alrighty.
Are you ready?
Go.
Darlton. Even though I watch Lost religiously, I've never felt the need to write it, and that is until today. Last night's episode, entitled Some Like It Hoth, included this line from Hurley, of all people: the Ewoks sucked. Dude, what? Excuse me? You can't be serious? Your uncalled for trashing of the Ewoks was the most mean-spirited thing the show has ever done, more so than even killing Alex. Keep your hipster fanboy rants to the message boards and talkbacks. We don't need them infiltrating this quality drama.
Wow.
The Ewoks were heroes, plain and simple. In conclusion, if this slight is not rectified with a formal retraction or apology, then I can only imagine the negative karmic retribution that awaits you. Please show the Ewoks the respects and admiration that they deserve. They are genuine heroes and deserve to be treated as such. Good day to you, gentlemen. I say good day from Yogurt Furry in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yogurt Furry in Minneapolis.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Well,
I don't know. I'm not quite sure what his point was, but
look, we knew that this was going to be a controversial concept when Hurley basically says the Ewoks sucked, and it, in fact, catalyzed it. About 2 hours of room time as the various writers weighed in on whether or not we loved the Ewoks or hated the Ewoks. And in fact, we went off on a tangent on how it wasn't even supposed to be Ewoks. In George Lucas's original reckoning of Return of the Jedi, it wasn't the moon of Endor. It was supposed to be the planet Kashyyyk, which is the Wookiee home planet, and that would be much more hardcore. So basically, we took on the feeling that Hurley actually believed that it should have been as in the original, that the final battle in Return of the Jedi, which is the culmination of the battle between the rebels and
three movies and
the evil empire, to fight it out with sort of cute little bear things as opposed to badass Wookiees would be far more superior. And then we were basically talking about,
and when people were talking about, like, sort of revisions in terms of what Hurley's thinking is, this is really an indication of it. We didn't actually spell out that he would prefer Wookiees to Ewoks, but that was the underlying, that was the part of the iceberg that was under the water.
Right, and he's just writing Empire. He hasn't even gotten to Jedi yet.
But right.
Fundamentally, it was more, and obviously there have been multiple conversations about Jar Jar Binks and how basically the Ewoks, when I saw Empire Strikes Back, it was 1983, I was 10 years old, and I actually liked the Ewoks a great deal, and I bought my Wicket action figure with everybody else. But I realized that the adults at the time, for example, my dad was not an Ewok fan. And in the same way that when the new movies came out, I was not a Jar Jar fan, but there's a whole generation of kids who love Jar Jar. So I think that when Hurley talks about not liking the Ewoks, a part of his childhood has died.
Right.
And that's really the way that we feel.
And obviously Yogurt Furry is a Ewok fan or a young child, one or the other.
And I feel if that's your real name, you've got much bigger issues than what Hurley said.
Personally, I was good with the Ewoks until they started singing.
Oh,
That's a digression.
Got a final question for you here, Carlton.
Okay.
From Ethan Duffy in Salford, England. Now Faraday's back, are we going to address his memory issues? It's one of the things that seemed to fall foul of events last year. That's the way the British say, you know, that
yes,
we didn't get around to
they
it.
Fall foul.
Which, by the way, foul. Thanks for catching up with on Miles. So, are we going to find out about Faraday's alleged memory issues? We know that Charlotte was quizzing him with Flash. What's up with that?
You know, I think actually this is one of those things that the show has provided a lot of information about this already. I mean, we knew that he had memory issues. We know that he basically was conducting experiments on himself in his laboratory. We know that the results of those experiments on Teresa, his girlfriend, basically put her in a vegetative state. It's probably reasonable to conclude that his experimentation on himself caused the memory problems. And then the question really becomes, what is he going to do about those memory problems? Now, that's something that the show might address. And, you know, we are also aware that the island has healing powers.
Ooh.
So maybe those two facts are connected. Maybe the fact that he has memory problems and ended up on this island, could there be a linkage between Faraday being on the island and his attempt to perhaps address his memory problems? Will the show address that?
That is a very comprehensive answer, Carlton.
Yeah.
I would say if next week's episode is a Faraday-centric episode, that perhaps the variable itself might deal
with
Ethan
questions.
Duffy's question.
Yes, so thank you, Ethan, and please stay tuned.
Wonderful.
One final question for you, Damon.
Oh, please.
There's not even a prelude to this. This is just Laurie in St. Cloud, Wisconsin. No, you know, no, nothing. Just
give it to me dirty.
If they're supposed to be stuck in the 70s, why do they open beer cans with the flip top? Beer cans in the 70s still had pull tabs, Damon.
Oh, well, this is one of those moments where, okay, continuity error. Except, my friend, not this time. In fact, is it possible, Carlton, is it possible that the Dharma Initiative themselves invented the flip top? Is it possible, Carlton, that perhaps when people ask about the funding that went into the Dharma Initiative, where did they get all the money to buy a submarine and build all these things, that they actually own the patent on the flip top, but they kept it to themselves and did not release it until the early to mid-80s?
It's a very interesting conjecture. It could be possible. It could be possible that someone else invented it. But what if the Dharma Initiative? I mean, here's an organization that was harnessing massive amounts of electromagnetism to conduct groundbreaking research projects. I mean, how hard could the flip top be compared to that sort of electromagnetic energy harnessing research?
Carlton, is it true that there is a Dharma station called The Can? And in that Dharma station, basically, there is a team
beer
of scientists.
Research.
There's a team of scientists working on different ways to open cans.
How is it that we are going to be able to get everything done in season 6 with ideas like that still floating out there, Damon?
Floating is right. There are other things that float. And this is definitely one.
I don't know. I think an entire episode about the beer can station would be awesome.
Look, I think that it's possible. If you were to look up who owns the patent on
the flip top. Do you know what zombies like? Beer.
I thought they liked brains.
But, you know, they like beer too.
I did not know that.
Well,
I didn't know that.
They do in our zombie universe. All right. I think that's kind of,
I
got. I
will say the highlight of this podcast was getting punched in the face by you. And we'll just leave it at that. Happy birthday to you, Chris.
And
thanks for watching, gang.
We'll see you soon.
Sorry about the Ewoks. We do hold a very special place in our hearts for Wicked and Tebow and all of them.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it for this podcast. Don't forget the 100th Hour of Lost this Wednesday, April 29th at 9 p.m. That episode, of course, is entitled The Variable, and it can only be found at ABC.